Bibles, do you have one? Open with me, if you would, to Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 1. We're in the middle of a study on a topic called pride. You got pride? You got problems. The bigger your pride, the bigger your problem. And that's a fact. We're going to be looking at part of that topic this morning. We look at ourselves and we say, we're it. God looks at us and He says, no, someone else is. And we're going to hear about that someone else right here. Hebrews chapter 1, beginning in verse 1. God is in many portions in many ways. Now, He sums sum up the whole Old Testament. What is the Old Testament? That verse right there. You just read it. Spoke to the fathers and the prophets in many portions in many ways. In these last days has spoken to us in His Son. How many of you have His? How many of you have the Son? His? The? How many of you, that word, either His or the, is in italics? It should all be, because that word doesn't exist in the original documents. It is a supplied word, that happens quite a bit, because this was written in Greek. And I don't speak Greek, do you? So our languages are different. Greek is a much more sophisticated language, and in some cases it doesn't translate in a way that flows. And so for the sake of flow, the translators, and I'm not arguing with them here, but I am, they put it in italics to let you know that they added it. Now, let's read it the way without added. In these last days, God has spoken to us in Son. You see, that doesn't quite make sense in English. It sounds like bad English, but actually, that's the way the Greek states it. Let's hear it from a different perspective. What if I told you in these last days God has spoken to us in Spanish? That makes sense, doesn't it? In English? That makes sense. But when it says in Son, that doesn't make sense. It needs to make sense. In other words, what God is saying to us here is God has spoken to us in the last days in the language of His Son. God has no other language. He has no other speech. He has no other word for us other than that which comes through His Son. In the Son, it says, God has spoken to us, whom, it goes on to say, whom also He made the world. And He is the radiance, Jesus is, of His glory, the exact representation of His nature. And He, Jesus, upholds all things by the word of His power. And when He had made purification of sins, He sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high, having become as much better than the angels, as He has inherited a more excellent name than they. Jesus looks, God looks at the Son, and He says, behold, the center of it all. He's it. He's everything. Focus your attention on Him. He's more important than the Old Testament or the New Testament. He's all of it. Focus everything on Him. He is it. I'm speaking to you only in Son from now on, if you will, what the writer of the Hebrews say. There was an Egyptian astronomer who, over 2,000 years ago, postulated the theory that the Earth was the center of the universe. He made a theory that said everything, the sun, the planets, the stars, everything revolves around planet Earth. Now, there was no way to prove or disprove his position. No one else really cared, honestly. And so his position held true, even though it wasn't, for a very long time. You know what happens if something isn't true but holds true for a very long time? It becomes true. It becomes a reality, even if it isn't reality. And that's kind of the way it is. Same is true with evolution, by the way. Enough people say it, everybody supposedly believes it. It must therefore be true. Well, no, it's not. But he postulated this truth, or supposed truth. It wasn't true, but people held to it for 1,400 years. It became such an entrenched thing in the society of ancient society, such a believed thing that it literally, remember, the Earth is the center of the universe. You know what people said? Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no, you don't. You don't say that kind of stuff. They got really mad. It became a huge scandal, international scandal all over. And then behind him came a guy by the name of Galileo. Not only did he say that maybe the Earth isn't the center of the universe, he said it absolutely isn't. In fact, he pointed to the sun. He said, that's the center right over there. This is a satellite. It revolves around that sun. Well, scandal of scandals, they had him arrested. Catholic Church had him excommunicated. All for saying the sun's the middle. He was right, wasn't he? He was. Well, listen, what Copernicus did and what Galileo did for the science community, God has done for our souls. God points to the Son, His Son, and He says, behold the sinner. He's it. He's the middle. He's everything. Everything revolves around Him. He's the center of the universe. You ever consider the question, ponder the question, why we're here? Why do we exist? What's our purpose? I know that you have, whether consciously or unconsciously. What's the answer to that question? Well, let me just say this. I know for a fact what your answer is, because it's the same as mine. I'm it. Purpose of the universe is to come to know that I'm it. I'm the center. I'm everything. Of course, you say the same thing, but you know the reason why I know that you're not the center? Because I'm the center. I'm the middle, and the sooner you come to realize that, the better off you're going to be, right? We all think that we're the middle. How do I know that we think we're the middle? Here's how I know. Anything happens. It's all about me, don't you know? The sooner you know, the better off you'll be. It's all about me. How does this affect me? What does this mean for me? What do people think about me? What about me? Look at me! We think we're the center of the universe. That is the human condition. It's a condition of insanity. And I'm going to prove that in just a second. But it is our condition. It's the way we think. Years ago, there was a newly elected politician. And he visited Washington, D.C. And when he visited there, he went and stayed with a seasoned United States senator. And he went to the senator because the senator had been there a long time and he wanted him to explain, and the senator did his best to try to explain the bizarre nature of what Washington, D.C. was like, and he was not doing a very good job because most of what he knew because he had been there a long time, and how can you translate experience into immediate knowledge is difficult to do. And one day they were standing down by the Potomac River there right outside of Washington, D.C., right beside where the senator lived. They were standing down by the water, and along comes this log floating down the Potomac River. And the senator thinks for a second. He looks at the guy, the young politician. He says to him, you see that log out there? He says, that log is D.C. That log is the capital. And the guy said, really? How's that? He said, well, imagine this. I can imagine that there's hundreds of thousands of bugs, termites, grubs, creatures, critters living inside of that log. He said, can you imagine that with me? He says, yeah, I can imagine that. He says, I can imagine that there's hundreds of thousands of bugs and critters, and every last one of them believes that they're the only one steering that log down the river. He said, that is Washington, D.C. Good description. Hold true today. Good description not only of D.C., but of human existence. We all think we're it. I'm the termite that's steering all this stuff, and the reason why I know that I am and you're not, because I am. And you need to come to that conclusion. I'm the sinner, don't you know? Well, listen, guys. Simple fact is, it's not all about us. It is all of it, categorical. It's all about God. And He is steering this thing. And again, the sooner we come to that conclusion, the better off we can be. And He puts it in uncertain terms. No uncertain terms. Matthew 10, 37 and 38. This is Jesus speaking. He who loves his father and mother, what does he say? More than me, is not worthy of me. He who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, Jesus said. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. Now, that's a really big statement, isn't it? That's really saying it, isn't it? Now, of course, it's easy for us to kind of brush this off because, I mean, the Son of God, He can say whatever He wants, huh? What if I said that? You love your father and mother more than me. You are not worthy of me. What would you think about me? A little loco, right? Not a little, but a lot. Keep your distance because He's off. This would be a statement of an egomaniac, wouldn't it? Him, but it's wrong for me. How is that possible? I mean, who do you think he is, right? Does he think he's God? I mean, if it would be egomaniacal for me to say that, how can God get away with this? What, by the way, just that's not the only example, right? What's the greatest commandment in the Scriptures? Love. How much? How much should you love Him? All of it. He deserves all of your energy, all of your focus, all of your ability, it's the greatest commandment of the Scriptures. And by the way, if you're not keeping the greatest commandment, you're guilty of breaking the greatest commandment. And you expect to go to heaven. How's that going to work? Huh? Why, we need Jesus, don't we? We really need someone to pay for our sins because we're sinners. We're guilty of breaking every last one of us. The greatest commandment, because, believe me, we think we're the focus. We love ourselves. Why isn't God number one in our lives? Because we are. And we want the whole world to think the same way. But God says unapologetically, I am. I deserve all of your stuff. Not a portion, not the best. I deserve all of it. You give me everything. It's not a suggestion. It's a command. A demand, if you will, of God. That I'm the sinner and I deserve everything that is yours. Everything that you can give comes to me. I deserve it. I am worthy of it. Again, who does he think he is? Really? Not just there. Isaiah 49 and 10, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is no one like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from the ancient times things which have not been done, saying my purpose will be established. I mean, who do you think he is? God, right? Who died and made him God, right? Well, he is. He is. Why is it right for God to say these things and wrong for us? Why is it right for God and sin for us? Why can he say stuff like that, but we can't say stuff like that? Well, really, anytime we're pursuing the topic of pride and arrogance, it's a question that we need to answer. Why can't we do what God does, and why is it wrong for us? Why is it eternally, infinitely, unimaginably wrong for us to take anywhere close to that position? Well, I want to make that point very clear this morning, giving you two things. Why is it right for God to say stuff like this and wrong for us? Why is it right for God to say, you must give me everything? Everything, all that you are, must be focused on me and nowhere else. And why would it be wrong for us to say anything close to that? Well, just simply this. Here's number one. Why are these demands right for God? You ready? This is a huge, huge statement. You ready? It's extremely profound. You ready to write? Come on. The reason why they're right for God is because they're right for God. That's why. They're right for him and they're wrong for everybody else. It's just that simple. Get over it. They're right for God because they are right for God. And by definition, not right for anyone else. Anyone else who takes that position is going to be, and Orwell says, you aren't. You are not worthy. You never were, you are not, and you never will be. Ever, never, ever. You are not worthy because you didn't create it all. You're not worthy because you do not sustain it all. You're not worthy because it's not about you. You're a part of the created order, and as such, you can't be the center of it. That doesn't make any sense. God is the center because he is the center. He's worthy of it in every way. Imagine with me for a second a little ant up here on stage. And this little ant has a crumb of bread that he holds up and he says, look at me. Look how strong I am. I can do this. I deserve your focus. I deserve your honor and respect because I can hold up this breadcrumb. I deserve your worship. Look how great I am. I deserve your focus and everything that is yours should come to me because look how powerful and how worthy and how amazing I am. Now, take that illustration, put an exponent of it on top of it, of infinity, and that's how much less we are than God, how much weaker we are, how much less worthy we are than God. And yet, you'll never find an ant saying anything like that, but people say it all the time. And it's totally insane. It's totally crazy. We're totally, completely off our noodle. We're crazy. We're nuts. And the worst thing is, we don't even know it. Someone tells us we don't believe them. That's really crazy. Really crazy. And You have gifts, right? Talents, abilities. And gifts are, what are they? Because it's the definition of a gift. The gift says nothing about the person that receives the gift. It says everything about the person who gives the gift. So you're gifted because why? Because God is a good God, and there ain't no other reason. There is no other reason. So they're gifts. You didn't earn them. You didn't deserve them. You weren't born with them. And you won't die with them. God will just collect them at the end, and he will pass them out to someone else, and you will go on your merry way. Now, that's bad news or good news. I don't know what it is for you, but that's the way it is. They're just simply gifts. So if they're gifts and you didn't earn them, you didn't deserve them, if you take credit for them, what have you done? Oh, you've messed up royally. You take credit, praise, glory for, I don't care how good you are and what you're capable of. I don't care how pretty or good looking you are. I don't care how smart you are or how capable you are in whatever field or area that you are. Great, I'm glad that you are. But nonetheless, it is a gift, and if you take credit for it, even a little, you're messed up. And guys, that's the reason why we're messed up. We're messed up because we're all about taking glory for stuff, taking credit for stuff, and it all belongs to him. It all belongs to the center of it all, and when we take the place of the center of it all, man, we just become crazier and crazier and crazier. There was a little girl who, on her birthday, received some gifts that really pleased her. She got a bottle of perfume, and she got a nice watch, a real pretty, shiny watch. She was so proud of those gifts, and she went around all day, sprayed the perfume on herself, smell, smell me, smell, smell, smell. 5 minutes later, smell, smell, smell. Her parents started getting sick of it. I mean, they gave her the gifts, you know. They were glad that she's excited about those gifts, glad they made a good decision, you know, and weren't that expensive about them. But after 25 different times of listen to my watch, smell my neck, they started getting a little tired of it. By the end of the day, supper time rolls around. Sitting down at supper, mom says to daughter, sweetheart, I'm going to have to ask you not to talk about your gifts. We're glad you got them. We've enjoyed them, but we need to just kind of lay off of it for a while, okay? I need you to not bring them up while we're having supper. We're going to talk about other stuff. Is that okay? Okay, 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 mom, I won't bring it up. I promise I won't bring it up. But so she didn't bring it up. She didn't say anything, but several times during the meal, she went like this. And then she went like this. Didn't say anything. Didn't say anything, but man, she loved the things that she got. She loved them. Meal was winding down. She was had reserved herself all the way through, and finally she couldn't hold herself anymore, and she finally said, y'all know I'm not supposed to say anything, but if anybody smells anything or hears anything, it's me. You know, that's exactly the way we are. We take the gifts of God, and what are they? They're nothing earned them, but when we perform in them, we say, it's me. It ain't you, brother. It's not you. So number one, the reason why God can say this kind of stuff and get away with it is because it's right for him. It's not right for you. Second reason, and this is, I think, maybe even a bigger one, maybe even a bigger wow kind of thing, at least it was for me. The reason why it's right for God and not right for us is because God is the only one in the universe who can command our worship, and in that command, it not be the demand of an egomaniac. Instead, it's the act, it's an act of infinite giving. He's the only one in the universe that can do that. If I command your worship, it is the demand of an egomaniac. If God commands your worship, it's an act of infinite giving. He's the only one that can be that way. Therefore, like I said, it's right for him. But it's not right for us. It's an act of infinite giving. Listen, the reason why God demands our worship is not to satisfy his ego. They said we read those verses and we think, wow, what an ego. He doesn't have one. You know why? Because egos are the possession of needy people. And God, by definition, is not needy. If he is needy, he's not God. Find another one. But because he's God, he's not needy. And because you are needy, you've got an ego, so do I. God doesn't demand our worship because he is to satisfy his ego. He demands our worship, listen, to satisfy you. Ever did, he doesn't now, and he never will. Ever, never, ever. He doesn't need, you are desperately in need of Him. God demands our worship, not to satisfy His ego, but to satisfy our souls. He does not need your praise, but you won't be right unless you give Him praise. You won't be right. He doesn't need our obedience, but listen, your joy, watch this, your joy won't be complete unless you give Him your obedience, Jesus said, John 15. If you keep my commands, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and abide in His love. These things, He says, I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full, complete. That my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full or complete. Notice, isn't that what we want? Isn't that what your peers are here to do on the island? Aren't they seeking that? Aren't they seeking joy? I mean, for all we stand up here and say, well, they shouldn't party and they shouldn't do this and they shouldn't do that, and I totally agree with it, but don't you agree with the pursuit? They're searching for the same things I am. They got a solution problem. We need to offer them a different solution. By the way, this is the solution, isn't it? Only one that works. The solution is what works. Solution. Any of us know this solution, we still are pursuing something other than this. And for that reason, our joy isn't complete. He doesn't need our obedience, but boy, do we need to obey Him. He doesn't need our honor, but we won't live unless we honor Him. God's self-exaltation is for our benefit, not His. He doesn't have an ego. Never going to have one. Here's a statement, and I think it's an awesome statement, and especially because I didn't write it. It even makes it better. Here it is. You ready? Our deepest joy will be found in directing our attention, our worship, our hopes in Him alone. Your deepest joy will be found when you direct all of your attention, all of your worship, all of your hopes in Him and in making Him known. That will be your deepest joy. Now, if you don't do those things, and that's your prerogative, you will not have joy. And you'll be lacking until the day you do. Until you come to the place where you realize that directing all of your attention, all of your worship, all of your hopes in Him and in making Him known is what you're about, then you will not be happy. And there's nothing I can do or anyone else can do for you. Directing all of ourselves to Him. But our world has it completely opposite, don't they? What does the world say? Direct our attention to God? No. Direct your attention to me. Get people to look at me. Look at me. Look at what I'm doing. Look at who I am. Look at what I'm about. It's all about me. That's our world's position, and they're hopeless for that reason, and many others, but that's a biggie. Watch football, because they pay them a whole bunch of money. They do their job. That is, they get out there and make a play, even though there's 10 other guys out there playing. The one guy makes a play, and what does he do? Does he stand up and say, I did my job, go back to the huddle? What does he do? Runs out 10 or 12 yards and does the dog and pony show, doesn't he? Wah, wah, wah. Come on, we're paying you millions of bucks. And you just did what you're supposed to do. Why should you do that? And again, because our world says it's all about me. And it's not just football, it's baseball, basketball. It's our musicians, our actors, our performers, our politicians, public people, private people, isn't it? It's everybody. It's the national, international, the well-known, the unknown, men and women, boys and girls, Western culture, Eastern culture. Everywhere, everybody, it pervades all of us. And let me just say this. And it's not okay. It is human nature, but it's not okay. It's a devastating sickness of our souls, and it's destroying us. We're missing the boat. It is insanity of the purest form. Let me give you this illustration. Let's say we were in an art museum. I was the curator. I was the tour guide. And I was leading all of you through this art museum, and I was explaining each one of the masterpieces. But every time we came across a Rembrandt, a Van Gogh, a Monet, etc., every time we came across one of these, I didn't stand over to the side and direct your attention to the masterpiece. And I didn't stand in back of you and direct your attention to the masterpiece and who painted it, etc. But I stood in front of the masterpiece, and I appreciate that. You're so generous. Thank you, you know. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Taking credit for the masters. What's the purpose of the masterpiece if it doesn't point to the master, right? But I'm taking credit for it? What would you think about me? Insane, and you'd be right. But don't we do the same thing? Aren't we going around in this world and taking credit for God's stuff? Didn't He create all of this? Did you create any of it? Taking credit for His gifts that He gave to you, not because you were worthy of it, and even though you have been a stinker, He hadn't taken them away from you? Isn't that amazing? And yet you're still taking credit for it? Really? Are we that insane? Or are we that crazy? Well, apparently so. Apparently so. So what do we need to do? How then should we live? Well, we should live as the moon does. You know what the moon is? It's a dark rock. That is all it's ever been. It is a dark rock. It doesn't do nothing but hang in space. But, as you know, if it's in the right position, it can reflect the light of the light-giving sun, and that light can bounce a soft light onto the backside of another dark rock that we otherwise know is planet Earth. And listen, when it does that, it fulfills its purpose. What a deal. How simple is that? How incredibly, profoundly simple is that? Just be in the right position and do what you're supposed to do, and bingo, your joy is complete. We have got to be all about reflecting the light of the center Himself. You've got to be all about it. Everything. Not just something that you do, sometimes that you do, or you can forget the whole joy thing. You can forget the whole fulfilled purpose thing. You can forget it. The sun only, moon only shows up 2 or 3 times a year. Is it fulfilled? No. What's it out there for? What are you here for? One purpose: to reflect the light of the center of the universe Himself. So, final question. Is your joy complete? Is it? And if it's not, what are you doing about it? Trying to find yourself? May I suggest a search warrant to find yourself with? And the use of both hands? You know, maybe. And if you come up with something, let me just say this, that you're not going to like it. You're not going to like it. Too many have tried before you and they didn't like it either. No, trying to find yourself, some people say. Focusing on yourself for a season. Trying to figure out what I want, we say. Really? Are you that nuts? Are you that insane that your life, that your focus is on you? You think you're the center? You think you're steering this thing down the river? Come on, really. Give up the insanity. You're a satellite of the center. You exist for Him. You exist for His pleasure. You exist for His glory. You exist for His worship. And you won't be happy until that's your passion. You won't. You will not be happy in this life until that, Him being the center. God, we need a passion for You. We need a passion that says You're the center, that it's all about You. We need a passion that keeps us from looking in ourselves. A passion that keeps us from thinking about, what about me? How does this affect me? It's not about us. It's about You. You demand our worship because it's the best thing. Because You love us. Because You want us to be fulfilled. Because You want us to have joy. What a deal. You love us so much, God. Thank You so much. Lord, I pray that we would accept that simple, simple action, that simple purpose of reflecting who You are in our lives. And that we would let it flow through us, Lord, so that we can be all that You've created us to be. Lord God, forgive us for our pride. Forgive us for our arrogance. Forgive us for thinking that we're the sinner. Help us to put You there. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.